Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
This morning on the Wake Up Call with KB and Andy.
Just an awful shot from Eldrick from the middle of the fairway on hole 14 to begin round two. We're in scramble mode here on the opening round after a great tee shot from Tiger Woods. So if you're looking for updates on him, I've got you covered.
Put some sunglasses on, Tiger.
You're in the right spot if you want Masters updates.
I've got you covered. Andy, you have been cackling the break. I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, are you just laughing at BBN Twitter videos and their reaction to the hiring of Mark Pope?
I was listening to something. It was, you'll like this, Mark. So you left the room. KB had a live read coming up, and I forgot that he had a live read. He had to remind me because I had a screaming F-word Kentucky fan that was on some Twitter spaces last night yelling and screaming about Mark Pope getting the job there in Lexington. Yeah, you know, we alluded to it a little bit at the beginning of the show. I find it really interesting, and I don't know why this is the case. I feel like college football, don't you feel like coaches move around? I mean, your coach went from Notre Dame to LSU. Brian Kelly, whether you like him or
he's
not.
He's not my coach anymore.
Well, he's not your coach, but you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, Kalen DeBoer.
You look at Saban leaves, and you know, Washington's in the national title hunt for a couple years, and he goes to Alabama, and there is, like, that is very common when we get to college football, and not to bring it back to the pros, but I mean, we understand 90% of the NBA coaches are interchangeable. You can't even name all of them, right? I mean, can you? And we understand every year in the NFL, there's what, 6, 7, 8, 9 teams are making some sort of a move. And in college basketball, you know, I always, and I actually got to give this guy credit, Mike DeCourse. I doubt he's listening in beautiful Carmel, Indiana, okay?
But is he Carmel? I thought he was Fishers.
He might be Fishers. I think you're right about
do
that.
Do not appreciate
I apologize. That label. I apologize to all the people in Fishers and the DeCourcey household. But he had Pope as number one on his list. And his take was big-time coaches don't go from one big-time program to another. It's just not something that happens very much. And, you know, if you look at Indiana with what they did with Mike Woodson, again, the Archie Miller, he was kind of a little bit like Chris Mack. Like, he was a guy that was ready to take the next step and everything else. But you look at Indiana, you look at what happened with U of L. They got rid of Kenny Payne, and they had to settle for their fourth, fifth choice and a guy in Pat Kelsey that, you know, nobody knows anything about. They weren't paying him a couple mil a year. And then Mark Pope, you know, big, bad Kentucky, they wanted to move on. So many people there wanted to move on from John Calipari, and they thought they would just, well, get Dan Hurley or somebody that would be a winner or the next John Calipari, and instead they got Mark Pope. And if you combine that with, you know, Duke Coach K goes and there's no search, and it's John Shire, and Roy Williams is gone there a few years ago in North Carolina, and it's Hubert Davis. And, you know, Scott Drew cannot get lured away. And I understand it. Nate Oates and some of these guys have big time buyout and contract situations. But it feels like, does it not, in college basketball, that you can win at more places? God knows you can't do that in college football, right? In college basketball, you can win at more places. And it's easier for a coach to get in there, get paid, and be comfortable there instead of moving all over the place. I just don't know why college basketball is different than college football and almost any other sport. Why is college basketball different? I don't know.
Why do you think the hire of Mike Woodson was made? And if I remember correctly, I don't know, 80, 90% of IU fans were rejoicing or very, very pleased with said hire. The hire of Mark Pope has been received with, like,
The opposite. No,
2%.
It's the opposite. Yeah.
And am I wrong in making the comp? I mean, we're talking players. Now, one obviously an NBA coach, the other college coach. Why do you think that is? Like, is it just going from Cal to that, whereas you went from Archie to Mike Woodson? Like, is it more of who the person is replacing?
It has to be. I mean, I saw a couple national guys say part of this is, you know, you are following Calipari. Now, Kentucky has, I think they have some people are not going to believe this. I think the basketball side has some small NIL issues that I think will get fixed here. Their facilities aren't the best, but still, it's Kentucky basketball. Why is it different? I don't know. Kentucky fans would tell you, sorry, Indiana fans, they'd tell you that Indiana basketball is just not what it used to be. I mean, that's what Kentucky fans would say. Well, I mean, we hold ourselves to a higher standard would be the rhetoric. And I think that rhetoric alone, KB, is why you're getting this anger. I think your parallel's right. I'm just confused why college basketball coaches, why Nate Oates would not have a contract or want to leave to go to Kentucky. We don't see that in other sports. We just don't see it in other sports when the Washington coach can be in the national title hunt, can be in the national title game, but when Alabama comes a calling, guess what he does? He leaves and he goes. I guess you could say, you know, even in college football, we've had big-time coaches moved. I mentioned Brian Kelly, Lincoln Riley. I mean, Lincoln Riley goes. You could see, Ryan Day at some point move and go from Ohio State and reset the shot clock somewhere else. And college basketball, man, these guys get ingrained and they just stay. And what I don't get, and you mentioned it, you know, this goes for Indiana as well. This goes for IU. If Mike Woodson stinks it up this season, let's say Mike Woodson's whatever. Let's say Mike Woodson's gone after this season, gets fired, he moves on, age, wants to spend time with the grandkids, whatever it may be. You know, you just saw teams down the road from you in Kentucky and Louisville just skip that middle tier of coach, right? Take a swing at one of the big dogs. Scott Drew tells everybody no.
Dan Early tells everybody no. This is Scott Drew wants to come back to state of Indiana. Well, Dusty May wants to come home.
He doesn't.
Bruce Pearl's dream job Indiana has always been Indiana.
He doesn't want to. Scott Drew doesn't want you. Don't offer him. Don't even go down that 2-3-4 day road where we have to talk about that here on The Fan. But like Indiana, if you get rid of Mike Woodson and you're not going to get one of the top dogs, you know. I mean, you haven't the last two coaching searches. You're not going to get one of the top dogs. Is Indiana going to get in that middle of, you know, where we talk about a Bruce Pearl, where we talk about the guy from Iowa State that I can't say his name, where we talk about a Sean Miller, those types of guys, because in two big college basketball searches, KB, that tier of coach has been ignored for the most part, and that's surprising.
I'd like for the Green Jackets to kiss my you-know-what.
Where are we
just
at?
Just utter disrespect and giving Tiger the tee times that they've given
him. Did he bogey? He bogeyed, didn't he? Did he bogey?
Just so disrespectful by the Green Jackets.
I'm looking up Jason Day's outfit, and it looks like it's about $150.
Jason Day's shirt is something you would see someone wear in the Coke lot.
Melbourne Golf Championship. That's what it says.
He's back to normal pants today, Jason Day. Again, yesterday he looked like Neil Armstrong.
He looked like me in high school with the JNCO jeans, like the giant baggy pants. 100%. That's what that looked like.
The mushroom on the pocket.
And again, I don't know what. I thought it was a Marlboro sweatshirt when I first laid eyes on him. Unbelievable. Tiger with a bogey on this first hole, in case you couldn't catch my utter disgust.
Was he angry?
Par 5 next. That second shot was awful. Just chunked it from the middle of the fairway. Great drive, Mark. I mean, that was a perfect drive, right?
I still think you should put on some sunglasses. He's staring right in the sun.
Yeah, you are worried about that.
What iron did he use there on his approach?
I think it might have been a wedge.
Was it a wedge on his approach?
119, it hit it from to you. We'll keep you updated on the Masters.
Clearly.
Round 2 also underway as guys finish up here in round 1. Really looking forward to Dane Brugler, NFL draft analyst, going to join us here coming up at 8:30. He's come out with his annual The Beast. It is an unbelievable encyclopedia to get you ready for the draft.
What's the word count on that thing?
If I remember correctly, I think I have this wrong. For some reason, 1,700 is popping into my head. I believe it's the number of prospects he has listed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's 324 pages.
I thought it was over 400 write-ups. And like these are very in-depth write-ups. Don't act like this is like 2 to 3 sentences and you're watching a mock draft here. Should we get into our Colts on the Clock?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, this series we're starting here again. Yesterday, Brock Bowers, as we get into the draft, we are less than 10 days away. We started yesterday of 10 players that could be there for the Colts at 15. We'll do player number 2 right now.
The Colts are on the clock.
All right, Brock Bowers was our opener yesterday. Andy Sweeney, we will stay in the SEC for player number 2. And I would say it's probably fair to say we're going to the Colts' biggest position of direct need, right?
Yeah, yesterday. So we told you basically we did a scale 1 through 10, how strongly we believe that Chris Ballard would take Brock Bowers. And I think both of us were, what, 2, 3, 3.5, something like that. So the confidence meter was not high, but the confidence meter, I would imagine, we'll get to it here in a second, KB, going to be pretty high. Terrion Arnold, the corner there at Alabama, has been, I would say, him and Quinyon Mitchell, the kid from Toledo, who we'll get into here next week. Those have been the two that have been on many mock draft boards for the Colts. Now, it's interesting. Arnold, I think the early mock drafts that were right after the season, I think were pretty close to unanimously took Arnold to be there for the Colts. Since then, you've got somebody, I'm just using him, Mel Kiper Jr., you know, put his out and thinks there's a chance there at number two. He picks the Colts at 15, but at 12, there is a thought, we'll get to the Denver Broncos, that if they stay in that pick, they could take a corner. Do they take Mitchell? Do they take Arnold? I find what's interesting about this. Will the Colts, if they stay at 15 and they go corner at 15, will they get their pick? In other words, you know, a team that's got like the second overall pick, they'll just take the other quarterback, right? You saw that last year. Houston's like, fine, we'll take the other quarterback. You want Bryce Young? We'll go ahead and take C.J. Stroud. That's how I feel about this. Will the Colts, will a corner go off the board by 15, or will Chris Ballard get the one that he really wants? And the one that he really wants, will it be Arnold? Many view him as maybe not the first corner, but might be the best corner. He obviously was at Alabama. Will, you know, but is he the number one guy? Is he the number two guy? I want to ask Dane Brugler that. But Terrion Arnold, cornerback there in Alabama, who had a great season last year.
Andy, this is probably the most intriguing corner for me.
Okay.
What I like about Arnold, multiple things. First off, he's got some versatility to play outside and inside. I think we have to keep in mind, Kenny Moore is not getting any younger, and you've got to start thinking about what that looks like, because I think, you know, more and more you see NFL teams move their top wideout into that slot position and say, hey, we've got to get off that, you know, whatever, the top outside corner. Let's move our guy around. And Terrion Arnold has done that at Alabama. Now, we haven't seen the Colts have a corner that can do that in quite some time. I think that is an important chess piece to try and find. It's difficult to find those guys, but if you do, I think that's a big counter to how teams try to attack you. I mean, think about how much the Rams moved around Puka Nacua in that game. Like, I think it's critical of, if you want to, and it's not been a big Colts MO, certainly under Gus Bradley, if you have that, though, that can be huge for you. And again, Arnold's got some experience there. I would think the thing that also stands out probably the most about him is just his ball production. He led the SEC in interceptions, led him in passes broken up.
Yeah, 5 interceptions. I think he had 12 passes broken up and a forced fumble. He put up great stats
conference, right? You know, which always stands out to me. He's got a pretty heavy basketball background. He actually thought about playing at Alabama. You imagine him on that Final Four team. But I bring that up because, you know, when I watch Kenny Moore play, I always think Kenny is like such a and I know this sounds stupid. He's such a great athlete. Well, no bleep, Kevin.
Right.
He's in the NFL.
He's in the NFL,
but
right.
I look at Kenny Moore and I'm like, I feel like that dude could go play soccer. I feel like that dude could go be a lockdown point guard in terms of a defensive kind of bulldog. And Arnold, I feel like, gives me some of those vibes. And I think that can make up for, he doesn't have maybe the exact creative player size you would want. He's not 6'2". He's not Juju Brents at corner from a height standpoint. The 40-yard dash time is 4.5. I know that rubs people the wrong way a little bit, but I think if you look closer at those numbers, the 10-yard and the 20-yard are very good numbers, and I think that is really important to keep in mind as well. So Arnold is a name that my wish is probably a little bit more of a Dallas Turner. I have to acknowledge that's probably a dream. The realistic stuff, I would go with Arnold probably over Quinyon Mitchell
Okay.
Out of Toledo, because of the versatility.
Because of the SEC, or do you not care about that?
A little bit of the SEC.
Okay.
Yeah. But I would go versatility, ability to follow guys around more than that. You know, when you think about it, They drafted three corners last year. They're all outside guys. You know, who is that inside guy to A, potentially take over for Kenny Moore at some point, and then B, have Gus Bradley sit there on a Tuesday night, which might be wishful thinking on my part, but say, hey, you know, guys, Nico Collins right now, he's the guy. You know, we need a corner to follow him around. Imagine if you would have had that in the season finale, a corner you trusted to follow around Nico Collins when Houston had a bunch of you and me's at the other wideout spot.
Yeah, if you look at it, I'm interested to talk with Brugler coming up at 8:30 in about 15 minutes about that. You know, the thought is, like you mentioned, that Arnold would be able to play inside and would be a little bit more comfortable doing so. You know, really between Arnold and Mitchell, they're about the same size, KB. 6'1", 190. They're about the... So you think of Chris Ballard and you think of measurables. If one of these guys was 6'2.5", right? 198, and the other one was 6'188", what would you say? You would know which one Chris Ballard would want, right? Am I wrong there? You would say he wants the guy that's a little bit bigger. That's who Chris Ballard would want. I don't know between these two which guy that he would want. I really don't. And again, it's funny. Tarion Arnold is now coming back in mock drafts, showing up a little bit more with the Colts. He had kind of been above the Colts. Then he had kind of dropped down where I thought maybe even like the Pittsburgh Steelers, who were a playoff team, obviously, a year ago. Now, we did this yesterday. We'll get to our scale here in a second. If there's a team that if you really want Tarion Arnold or if Chris Ballard really wants Arnold, who could take him in front? Like I said, the interesting thing for me coming up in a couple weeks will be not how many corners go, but when the run on corners starts. And to me, if you look at Kuiper's last mock draft, you know, he has at 12 the Broncos taking Mitchell, the Toledo corner that we've been talking about. That sets up Arnold going to the Colts, and then after that, you have Cooper DeJean or DeJean. How do you say that? The corner from Iowa.
I think
that's right as well.
More Iowa than DeJean.
Well, you're damn right it does. So to me, it would be the Denver Broncos at 12. If they stay put and they don't make up go up draft boards and make a big move for a quarterback, to me it would be, okay, at 12, what does Denver do? If I want Tarion Arnold, that would be the team that would surprise me.
Jason Day is wearing a shirt. It looks like my dad is showing me pictures of a frat party of his days at Indiana State and what Jason Day is wearing right now.
Yeah, but that stuff's popular now. What your dad wore at Indiana State is probably could be sold in a vintage store for hundreds of dollars.
Yes, it's popular. It's not what anybody wears playing in the Masters.
Right. It's something you'd find like Abercrombie and Fitch in 2002.
Can you imagine the disgust on the Green Jackets' faces when they saw Jason Day get out of the car this morning?
Listen, Jason Day gets paid a lot of money to wear that damn ugly-looking sweater. So I'm going to back Jason Day.
He looked like he passed out at the Hooters with John Daly last night with that shirt on.
I'm going to back my man Jason Day.
Going 8.4 on our 1 to 10 scale.
Okay, I'm gonna go 8.
Oh, we're doing that. I thought it was just solid numbers. We're going point 0.4.
We are gymnast judges here. I thought
we were ranking 1 through 10, like one. You know, who we thought was going to be the most likely pick.
I understand what Mark means, but I did not know we would go to the point system.
No.
I'm going to go 8.
I'm going decimal.
I'll just go 8.
8.4, the realistic draft pick for the Colts at 15 being Tarion Arnold, corner out of Bama. And for those that care about this stuff, and we know Chris Ballard does, by all accounts, he more than checks the character box.
I'm going 9. Give me 9.
That's big. Atlanta and New York, I'd throw out there. You know, defensive-minded head coaches above Indy. I get that there are some offensive needs, certainly in Atlanta, but those are a couple teams. And do you look at New Orleans and think, you know, life after Marshawn Lattimore is probably something that needs to be thought of as well?
Yeah, I had not thought of the Saints. The Saints are kind of one of the more random teams in the NFL.
Which is right above Indy, right? New Orleans is 14.
It's right there. So, yeah, you're taking, again, when does that run on corners? Does it get to the Colts or is it right before? To me, that's going to be a big decision. So where's Tiger at here? Before we get to a check down, where is Tiger?
Yeah, he's in the middle.
Is he on 2? I think your mic's off. Hang on.
Sorry about that. He's in the middle of 15 fairway, which is a par 5. I assume he's going to lay up. There were some guys having to lay up yesterday, and I would guess in a little bit of cooler temps this morning, he will lay up. But we need a birdie after that bogey.
Is that Bubba Watson?
That is Bubba Watson.
He gets to play in the Masters forever, given that he won it one time.
He's
right?
another one of my twice, Masters right? picks. He was in my tier three
did
in
he win
Kevin's
it twice?
Pool.
I thought he did win it twice. Did Bubba Watson win it twice, Mark?
I believe so.
Is
yeah.
he tier three?
He's
he
no
like
in
four?
Kevin's Masters pool. He's my okay. he's my tier three pick.
All right. Yeah, I did put him tier three.
Is he a tier three guy?
Like at one point, he joined Liv to be like their mascot. And I'm not
well,
joking
did
about
he,
that.
Did he leave? He joined Liv yeah. and then he got out. Are you
but
able
he was
to
like,
do that?
I think he was injured or something, so he just went to the events and he was like the mascot.
Bubba Watson won the Masters in 2012 and 2014.
Yeah.
I say this, I didn't know you could commit to the Saudis and then leave the Saudis. I thought you
no,
were
no, 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 he's still there. Let
once
me be
got,
very clear.
Once you got to
no
live,
one
you,
leaves the
okay,
Saudis.
Thank you, that's what I was about to say.
Let me be very clear.
Once you join Liv, you're kind of stuck at Liv, guys.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Hey, fam. I'm asking for your support. Help us raise money for St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. Families never receive a bill from St. Jude for treatment, travel, housing, or food, so they can focus on helping their child live. By pledging just $19 a month, you're helping St. Jude give every child with cancer a chance. Help St. Jude save lives. Call 1-800-411-9898. That's 1-800-411-9898 and become a partner in hope today.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Hey fam, I'm asking for your support. Help us raise money for St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. Families never receive a bill from St. Jude for treatment, travel, housing, or food, so they can focus on helping their child live. By pledging just $19 a month, you're helping St. Jude give every child with cancer a chance. Help St. Jude save lives. Call 1-800-411-9898. That's 1-800-411-9898 and become a partner in hope today.
Oh, boy. Tigers wedge game. Bit rusty here on this Friday morning. The Green Jackets, again, they can kiss my ass for giving him the tee times they've given him here. Just absolutely utter disrespect towards one of the game's all-time champs. The all-time champ.
You just want to get to Dane Brugler so
yeah,
he doesn't have
Dane.
To hear this
mm-hmm.
because literally right now, Mark, like in the next hour and a half, we might see Tiger be like plus four and we might see Bowen just completely melt on the radio, which of course would be good for us.
Mark was a little taken aback by my audible sound that I made after that flied wedge over the green on 15, trying to get up and down for par. Dane Brugler, no busier human, I would argue, in the world, certainly with the NFL draft here in the past few weeks and all of that work. We now can see, with The Beast being published on Wednesday, you heard Dane with us down at the Combine back in late February. And Dane Brugler from The Athletic joins us now on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Dane, I always enjoy when you have you on post-Beast publication, and I love when you give us the numbers. So give us the raw numbers. How many prospects, how many scouting reports, how many pages, and how many long snappers are in there?
Well, okay, so we have 1,967 players with NFL-verified testing for each one, 404 scouting reports, there's 320-some pages, 385,000 words. I think I stopped it at maybe five long snappers. I mean, in my notes, I mean, you could go 20 deep, but
sure.
No, I think I stopped it at five. So I had to be responsible.
Andy Sweeney, 385,000 pages.
Words.
Like, remember when you know, it was like, oh, yeah, you know, I need you to 1,000 word count. I
can't even imagine.
Can you imagine that?
No. Was there ever a time where you didn't hit save on the document and you lost a couple scouted reports? That's the first thing I thought of when I saw The Beast. And by the way, congratulations. It's a great publication yet again. It really is, Dane.
Thank you. No, I appreciate that. I've been doing this a long enough time that I've learned my lesson about properly saving and, you know, all the different tricks from, yeah, just pop in a USB and just, you know, do a quick save or, you know, email myself something or just, yeah, there are too many ways for it to go sideways. And unfortunately, when you do something like this, you're on a clock. You know, you don't have time to waste a day or lose a couple of days of work. You just can't make that up because, you know, the draft is coming and there's the biggest thing I struggle with when putting this together is when is enough enough when you're watching a player? Because in a perfect world, you're watching every single tape these guys put out the last 2 years, but that's just not realistic. And so for some of these guys, it's 5-6 tapes. Other players, you need to see a little bit more before you really feel comfortable with who they are as a player. So just for me in my process, that is what I run into the most of just that internal battle of, okay, when is enough and when do I feel like, okay, I've got this guy, this is who he is, I can move on to the next player.
Dane Brugler with us from The Athletic. He joins us on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Again, the beast is out, 324 pages, 385,000 words, 404 reports, 1,967. I forget what that number even was, Dane. I wrote them all down, but it's a beast. It's players, I guess that would be. It's absolutely awesome. I wanted to start here. There, obviously, we'll get to the Colts here in just a second, and this may also wrap back to the Colts, but we had you on that Friday morning of the NFL Combine, and we had a great conversation from that day, Friday of the NFL Combine, to where we sit here on this Friday on April 12th now, within 2 weeks. You know, we'll wake up in 2 weeks and we'll have the first round in our back pocket. What has changed the most in those few weeks from that Friday to this Friday?
That's a good question. I don't know that a ton has really changed for me, you know, because so much is the hay's in the barn at that point. When you get to the combine, it's just a matter of cross-checking the testing information compared to what you've seen on tape. And sometimes there are some irregularities in terms of what you thought a player was going to do athletic testing wise. I think that with the quarterbacks, it's always interesting. In my opinion, it's Caleb and Drake, but it really feels like Jaden Daniels is going to be that number two pick to the Commanders. And I understand. I mean, it's not like I'm not a fan of Jaden Daniels and what he offers. He's a top 10 player on my board. I think he's going to be a good pro. I can understand, because when you want a quarterback, you're essentially making a bet. And I can understand why you would make a bet on Jaden Daniels as your quarterback. I'm just surprised that it would be over Drake May. I think Drake May just has so much more to offer upside-wise, talent-wise. He's a much younger player. I feel like when you look at his ceiling, what it could be, I'm just a more believer in that. And so it is interesting, the narratives on how things change a little bit. And with Jaden Daniels looking like the favorite to be that number two overall pick, a little bit of a surprise, but I tell you what, if I'm the Patriots, I'm loving that. I'm picking at three, and if Drake May falls in my lap, he's not going to be on the board at four.
He is Dane Brugler. The Beast is absolutely worth the price of your Athletic subscription. He published earlier this week the Ultimate Draft Guide. He's with us right here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Dane, I'm not sure how much you've followed the Malik Nabers visit situation, but reportedly visit with the Colts yesterday. The Colts are at 15. Why? What? Like, Malik Nabers at 15? How surprised or just, like, confused are you if you've been following that along? Because for us, this is pretty head-scratching. We haven't seen him pass, like, 6 in a mock draft.
Well, I think it's, you know, the reasons for the 30 visits are, there's so many and if you have a question about a player, then it's, you're doing your due diligence by going to find out. I mean, I think the Colts don't have any delusions of grandeur that, hey, he might fall to us at 15, or even if he would fall to 8, 9, it still feels like it would be tough to see the Colts, you know, making that big enough move to go get him. But, you know, who knows? And 4 years, he could be, or 5 years, be available in free agency. And, you know, what are those questions that you had about him that you weren't able to answer from the draft process? Or, you know, maybe it's a fact-finding mission and trying to learn more about Brian Thomas, who, a wide receiver that could be in play at number 15. So I think there's so many different reasons for these 30 visits. A lot of teams don't even use the full 30. So, you know, I don't think it's strictly, hey, we want to draft this guy. It's, sometimes there's some ulterior motives, and you have to kind of put your investigative hat on and kind of try to figure out why. With Malik Nabers, I think, you know, there's some question marks. Just he was a young player. He's still just 20 years old. And for a team like the Colts, that you never know if let's just say hypothetical, he does fall to say the eighth pick. And if you're the Colts, that might be striking distance for you. You don't want to be caught in a situation where you didn't cross all your T's, dot all your I's to know, is this guy worth it? Is he worth giving up that number two pick, our second round pick, to go up and get him? So, you know, even though it feels like a long shot that Malik Nabers would be an Indianapolis Colt after the first round, you still, it's just, I think it's due diligence on Chris Ballard's part and the Colts' part to make sure you know everything you need to know about the player.
2 weeks from today, we'll be recapping round one of the NFL draft, round two and three, on that final Friday there from Detroit. That's where this year's draft is. And again, Dane Brugler from The Athletic with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Dane, let's move to corner. It's probably the biggest immediate need for the Colts as you look at them in regards to pick 15. How do you kind of view the top of your cornerback position list?
Yeah, I think that pick at 15 is either going to be a pass catcher or it's going to be a corner. And there should be multiple options for the Colts there. And for the, you look at the defensive players in this draft, you can make an argument the top two defensive players, any position, are the corners. That's how it fell on my board. And I know that's how it falls on some teams' boards, with Terrion Arnold from Alabama, Quinyon Mitchell, Toledo, whatever order you might have those guys. Mitchell has just been, he has crushed it the last 8-10 months. You know, he had some love from scouts over the summer, but we're talking about his second, third round pick. But then he goes through the season and he's an All-American, and you know, nobody's having better ball production in the last 2 years at the defensive back position than Quinyon Mitchell. The last 27 games, he has 43 passes defended, just an outrageous number. And so going after the season, he's an All-American. We're looking at him as, hey, this is going to be a top 35 pick. And then he goes to the Senior Bowl and just crushes it. Best player on the field. Goes to the Combine. Oh, okay, I'm just run a 4.33 at over 6 foot, 195 pounds, 38-inch vert. Okay, check that box. So everything you wanted to see from Quinyon Mitchell, he has done. He has aced the process. And that's why he has a decent chance to be the first defensive player drafted. Terrion Arnold, he's right up there with him, obviously playing in the SEC compared to the MAC, big difference there. Didn't have the same type of 40. For some teams, that could be the differentiating factor. With Terrion Arnold, he ran a 4.50, and so doesn't have quite the same speed, but his cover athleticism is outstanding. I had one scout tell me, who was at the Alabama Pro Day, no, he didn't run a great 40, but he had one of the best corner workouts I've ever seen in terms of the movement skills, short area quickness, just being a sticky corner with the movements and what you want to see out of a workout. So both these players, Arnold and Quinyon Mitchell, I think are worthy candidates for the Colts there at number 15.
How are they different, Dane? How are they different as players?
Yeah, I think with Terrion Arnold, he's a little more willing to come up and just smack you in the mouth. He's got this physical, competitive makeup, and that's not to say that Quinyon doesn't, but Quinyon's, I think, a little more finesse. He wants to just stay attached, and you know, he can close space, but he's not going to come up and necessarily hit you. And you know, he wasn't asked to jam a lot in college, where with Terrion Arnold, he wants to be physical. He loves to talk. And Quinyon, he's more, a little more reserved, a little more introverted with how he plays. I mean, he's a dog, don't get me wrong, but he's not as vocal as, say, a Terrion Arnold is, who he will try to get in the mind of receivers with the way he talks, the way he plays. Honestly, that might be the reason why he ended up as corner one for me, talking about Terrion Arnold, because he does have that competitive makeup that I want my corners to have. And he just also a really talented player as well. So I think that mindset is just a little bit different between the two. But, you know, that's not to say that Quinyon Mitchell is not, or, you know, he's soft or anything like that. Not saying that at all. He's just not quite on the same level as Terrion Arnold when it comes to the physicality.
Again, he is Dane Brugler from The Athletic. The Beast is a must-read, as I said, to lead off the show. You might need 13 bathroom trips over the next couple of weeks to consume it all, but it is an absolute goldmine of an encyclopedia when it comes to the draft. Dane, I want to throw some local guys at you. Let's start with the biggest name. Obviously not a high school product, but certainly gave fans in Bloomington arguably their greatest IU football memories over the past, maybe their lifetime. Michael Penix, as we talk in 2 weeks on Friday morning, will Michael Penix's name have been called, you think?
I think there's probably a 50-50 shot. I think that we're going to see, obviously, the four quarterbacks go in the first round at the top, in the top half of round one, and then does another one sneak in there? Could two sneak in there with Michael Penix and Bo Nix? I think that there's a 50-50 shot. We see maybe the Raiders trade up from that second round pick, maybe into the late first to go get him. Or, you know, what are the Broncos going to do with their quarterback situation? Would they trade back from 12 and maybe take Penix a little bit later? I really feel like it's a coin flip at this point because most teams have him and view him as a day two pick, but all it takes is one team to say, you know what, we're not going to sit in the second round and wait for him to come to us. Let's go get our guy if we feel like he's worth it. So, yeah, I would say it's 50-50 at this point.
Okay, two other local names. Hoping I'm not catching you off guard. I don't think I am because I know you've been really high on Tyrone Tracy during this process. The Decatur Central product obviously transferred mm-hmm. to Purdue. And then Austin Booker from Center Grove here, who's bounced around a couple spots. So the edge rusher and Austin Booker, and then Tyrone Tracy sounds like a pretty good receiving back. Your thoughts on those two local guys?
Yeah, you know, Tyrone Tracy was kind of like one of my guys, you know, just from the tape study in November. It's like, okay, this is a guy I want to target in that fifth, sixth round. But then he goes to the combine and just blows it up. It's like, all right, secret's out on Tyrone Tracy. And again, good for him because he deserves the love that's coming his way. He's a really when you look at his background, being a former wide receiver, moving the running back, well-built athlete, his ability to create with the ball in his hands is a lot of fun to watch. Some of the decision making at the line of scrimmage, you're just kind of like, you know, why'd you make that cut? Or, you know, you need to maybe just press the hole a little bit more. And so you see some of the inexperience as a true running back, but just get the ball in his hand and he's going to be able to create, whether he's moving vertically, horizontally, and then that multi-dimension threat, being able to catch the ball in the backfield, that's what a lot of teams are looking for. So, yeah, I think somewhere early day three is where we're going to see him come off the board. The secret's kind of out on him. He's a really good player. And then with Austin Booker, 6'4.5", 255 pounds, a young player. He just turned 21 years old and didn't start at Kansas. He had one start in his entire college career, redshirt sophomore coming out early. But you see the promise with what he offers. He's got a body that still needs to grow into. He was 13 pounds heavier at the Big 12 Pro Day than he was at the Combine. And so you'd like to see him continue to put on more good weight while still not without losing that athleticism. So you see the athletic traits, you see the length, you see the way that he can break down blockers. And I think you see a guy that's going to go somewhere in that third round as a promising pass rusher, be a situational guy as a rookie, and then eventually grow into a starting role down the road.
Dane Brugler with The Athletic. He's got The Beast out. It's absolutely fantastic. Go check that out. You get that with your athletic description or prescription. What am I trying to say here? Give me the word, KB. I'm struggling.
Subscription. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Watching Tiger, and there's a lot of prescriptions probably
there's a lot of things.
With Tiger, yeah.
I'm sure Dane cares. Tiger put one within about 2 feet, so there you go, KB. last one for me, Dane. If Arnold happens to be there, or Mitchell, if one of the two big corners happens to be there, and they probably will at 15, and Brock Bowers is there at 15, what do you think? I mean, what the predicament that Chris Ballard could be in there at 15, a good predicament, but those are two opposite players, one offense, one defense. We know about weapons around Anthony Richardson, but if Arnold's there, or Mitchell and Bowers, what do you think?
Yeah, that's tough. And obviously you're in a division with CJ Stroud and Trevor Lawrence, and you need cover guys. You need guys that can lock down these receivers in that division. I'm not passing on Brock Bowers. I'm just not doing it. Give me the guy that's going to help influence the scoreboard with touchdowns. And I think you look at with that Steichen offense, the different ways that you could utilize him in the backfield out wide in the slot. What he gives you as a blocker, he's a master of the hidden yards. You know, for most tight ends at the 6 yard gain, he finds a way to get 9. And so he just changes, he tilts the equation so much in your favor. As long as you feel comfortable with the plan that you have for him, I think he's a worthy pick at that point. I understand the pushback with the tight end and the top half of round one. I get it. This guy is an offensive weapon. And so if he were to fall in your laps at 15, I'm not passing on him. He is worthy of that pick because he's so dynamic.
Dane, unbelievable. I'm astonished every year as soon as I open it up and I start to scroll and just the amount of detail. I mean, this is not a half-assed effort by any means out of you. Again, 1,967 players, 385,000 on the word count there, and 404 scouting reports. It is the beast on The Athletic, and it is a must for anybody that cares about the NFL draft. Dane, I know you're super busy and probably a little bit of decompress as you, I don't know, maybe reintroduce yourself to your family. Thank you for making time with us here.
Anytime, guys. Thanks.
Pacers can go.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
St. Jude treats children across the country and around the world, regardless of color, creed, or financial capability, because they're committed to love and care for their neighbors. Join me in helping St. Jude give every child with cancer the chance they deserve to survive. Together, we can save more lives. Call now to become a partner in hope. 1-800-411-9898. That's 1-800-411-9898.
For the clinch tonight in Cleveland, Alex Golden from Setting the Pace going to join us in a few. What an opening round for a man that has had a very nice PGA Tour career so far, but is yet to show up really at all in the majors. Max Homa is 6 under par through 17 holes playing with Tiger. Typically, a lot of people like to fade the guys playing with Tiger thinking they'll get too caught up in that atmosphere. Homa has been incredible, though, here in round one. A chance to tie Bryson DeChambeau. So right now, that's what the leaderboard looks like. Bryson 7 under. Homa and Scottie Scheffler at 6. And Nicola Højgaard shot 5 under, finishing up his round this morning. Tiger Woods back to even par. 1 bogey, 2 pars so far here on this Friday morning.
Yeah, well, I mean, Homa's playing so well because Mark Dykton put him in his pool, did he not? His Homa, Masters pool, so yeah. Congratulations.
Homa, Scheffler, Xander, and Bubba Watson. I need all four of those guys to make the cut.
It's the Mark Dykton effect.
He was the one that actually joined the pool. Andy did not.
Yeah. Andy had did
to,
not.
He had to check his fantasy baseball lineup. Didn't have time
both
to join
them.
The Masters pool.
Yeah, both of them. I didn't know what Josh Bell was going to do this afternoon.
7:30 tip.
What year is it?
Slight underdog. The Pacers are in Cleveland tonight. Talk more about that and the playoffs upcoming for Indiana. Alex Golden from Setting the Pace joins us now. Alex, if I asked you for greedy advice, how greedy should Pacers fans be when it comes to their seed and potential matchups for the playoffs?
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing to look at because if you get into the 4-5, you might have a chance to be the 4 seed if everything plays out in your favor. But do you really, if you want a series, want to play Boston in the second round? Or would you rather go 1-1, stay in the 6 and take your chances of avoiding Boston until maybe the Eastern Conference Finals? I think at this point, it's too hard to tell with how many games are there. So I think Pacer fans should really be 1-2 wins and just kind of let the cards fall where they may. Get as close as you can to potentially hosting a playoff series, because there is a legitimate shot Indiana could have a 4 seed the way Orlando has been kind of falling as of late. And I think if they beat Cleveland, they'd have that tiebreaker too. So it just, I think the 4 seed is a very at play here for the Pacers.
Tiger stinks.
Oh God.
What the hell was that? I barely got halfway to the hole.
Alex, are you consumed by the Masters at all? Because that's what me and Mark have been living with, obviously, for the last couple
I'm
hours.
I'm sorry,
here.
Alex. I didn't want to interrupt. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I know KB is a Tiger enthusiast. He's a big golf guy. I am not a big golf guy. I think like the first time I ever played golf, like a par three, and it took me like 14 hits to get it in there. I said, this is not my sport, and just gave up completely. And I'm saving a lot of money because I know how expensive golf can be.
You might beat Tiger, honestly, with that effort. Tiger, like that. Just a horrific attempt at a birdie on 17.
I do love that. Alex tried one time at a par three, and he gave up completely for the rest of his life. I appreciate that. Alex Golden with us, setting the pace on the Payless Liquors hotline. Okay, so KB asked you about being greedy. I guess I'll kind of ask you a similar question, and we talked about this earlier in the show, and really we need to do this after they finish these two games against Cleveland and Atlanta. We get the full 82 game sample size, but you know, they're the sixth seed right now. Do you sit there as a fan and say, boy, I sure wish we had one of those Bulls games that we lost, or Nets games, or Portland or Charlotte. I wish we had a couple of those terrible losses. Or do you sit there and say, boy, you know, we have the tiebreaker over some really good teams, including like Milwaukee, and it could be Cleveland and Philly and Miami and everybody else. So they sit there, they could, you know, if they had a couple of those games, Alex, it'd already be the fourth seed, but they also have some big wins along the way. That's kind of been the story of this Pacer season. How do you view it as we're two games away from finishing the year?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, a lot of these games that they've lost, they should have won. I mean, they could easily be the two seed in the Eastern Conference if they would have won those games. But at the same time, like, who would have thought you'd sweep OKC? Who would have thought you'd beat Milwaukee 4-1? So I think that it all kind of plays out a little bit. But the fact that they've held their own against the top teams in the Eastern Conference, I mean, I think they still got two wins on Boston. They played them five times. So, you know, they've definitely shown they can hang with anybody in the Eastern Conference. So, yeah, while you like to have those losses back and it could put you in a much better spot and potentially be at the two spot, I think he's something pretty proud of the way that this team has played. They get the 46 wins already, a chance at 48, improving their win total from potentially, I think it'd be like 12 to 13 games from last year. It's just one of those things where it's wow, what a jump they've made, and it's been quite a fun ride since they, you know, the in-season tournament run, the acquiring Pascal Siakam, dealing with the Halliburton injury and how much that kind of impacted the team. So, yeah, I just think they've done a really good job kind of treading water here as of late, staying above 500 in the month of March, or 8-7. So, Just playing good basketball as they're heading into the playoffs, too. I think it's a good spot to be in, despite the bad losses that you would like to have back.
Yeah, from 25 wins to 35, and right now 46 wins with two to go. Again, tonight in Cleveland, that is a 7:30 tip Sunday Fan Appreciation Day over Gamebridge Fieldhouse, 1 o'clock versus the Hawks, who I don't believe are playing for anything at this point outside of maybe knocking off Trae Young, Rust. Again, Alex Golden, setting the pace, is joining us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Alex, let's say we talk in a week. Pacers getting ready for game one. Let's say it's Saturday. Best of seven series. Rick Carlisle calls you up. Hey, Alex, you think Doug McDermott should be in my rotation? What would be your answer?
I would say, did you see him in the rotation against the Miami Heat when it was a must-win game? No, you didn't. That's the reason why. Doug McDermott, nice guy, good shooter, not playable in the playoffs, in my opinion.
So you go eight, and that would be what? Toppin, Smith, McConnell as your three-person bench.
What about Shepherd?
I would play Shepherd probably.
So you go nine?
I would go nine. Yeah, I would play Shepherd because I think he has been consistent enough defensively that you can trust him. You know, I wonder how many minutes you do allow Jalen Smith. Jalen Smith has not been playing the greatest basketball as of late. They've gone small a little bit with Obi Toppin at the five, and that's actually worked out pretty well. And I know I've asked Carlisle about that, and he actually likes that, you know, optionality there to play with Toppin and Siakam together. But, you know, I think you got to ride Turner minutes out as long as you can. Hopefully he can play close to 40 minutes a game, because I just don't know if I trust Jalen Smith in a playoff series for a heavy amount of minutes. But I think Ben Shepherd, you're going to need him, because I feel like there could be a time when you get into foul trouble, Aaron Nesmith specifically, because the little times he plays a little too aggressive and sometimes gets himself caught in a bad spot. So I think Ben Shepherd's going to be very important to this team in the playoffs.
Alex Golden with us, setting the pace. You can check that out. He joins us, Payless Liquors Hotline, on this Friday. You mentioned Jalen Smith, not trusting him in the playoffs maybe as much as you do in the regular season. I totally understand that. You know, he'll have the chance to potentially move on. We know the contract situation there. What a restricted free agent, I believe, there with Obi Toppin. Is it either or this this offseason and the consistency of Obi Toppin the last 3 weeks or so, does that surprise you?
Yeah, no, it really does. I mean, I was pretty, like, met on Obi Toppin, and I think if you look at, like, the first half of the season or the games when he was a starter, he was a net rating of zero. He was just as impactful as he was offensively as he was defensively. He wasn't really giving you anything. But I think I looked like a week ago, he had been like a plus 10 in the net rating in terms of how much he's improved playing off the bench. And so I really like the way that he's kind of adapted into that role. And I understand that Jairus Walker is still a big part of this team's future, and that does weigh into the decision-making on that. But there's been a lot of talks that you could see Jairus Walker playing more of the small forward position, which then, you know, allows there to be a spot for Obi Toppin in the rotation. So I think with Isaiah Jackson playing the way that he's played this year, I know he still gets into foul trouble, I think Jalen Smith does become a little bit more expendable than maybe he was early on. But at the same time, the shooting of Jalen Smith from outside really helps pair with Pascal Siakam and what he does on the inside. So don't love the Pascal-Isaiah fit, but if you're pairing Isaiah mostly with Obi Toppin and the way he's shooting the, you know, the leather off the basketball, then I think that could be a fit, and it adds a ton of athleticism to that second unit.
And I will say, Tiger has striped the driver. If there's one thing I could commend him on, he has driven it beautifully here today. Alex Golden certainly caring about that. He will be a busy man when the playoffs get here, setting the pace. A great listen for Pacers fans out there. Alex, last one from me, and I know it's not maybe the most pressing immediate question, but we should get some word on All-NBA announced here, I would assume, in the next month or so. Tyrese Halliburton, do we think he's like definitely on one of those three teams? Because, again, contractually, financially, there's a lot of ramifications off of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting you bring that point up, because I feel like everybody thought it was a slam dunk early on. Then the injury happens. He ends up making he qualifies for the amount of games you have to play. And I've been seeing a lot of different people on podcasts not including him on their teams. Now, there is an interesting dynamic this year where I don't think it's by position. It's just by the top five players for each team that you want. So it doesn't have to be two guards, two forwards, and a center. So that does make it a little bit more interesting. But I've seen a lot of people putting Steph Curry on that third team over Tyrese Halliburton. And so I think that, you know, Tyrese's numbers have been down. We know that he struggled quite a bit in March. So he's getting back to himself. But I feel like if he finishes the lead, leading assist, that's going to help sway him a little bit. If the Pacers can get a top four seed, I definitely think that helps too with his case. But yeah, it's a weird thing, because I think it was a slam dunk for him at first, and now it kind of sounds like it could be a question mark whether he gets it or not. And I understand why. There's a lot of good guards who've been playing really well. Jalen Brunson's one of those that has really stepped up his game too. So it's just, you know, I think that injury really hurt Tyrese, and hopefully it doesn't affect him contractually, because that's a big loss there, money-wise, if he doesn't make it.
And give me those numbers again. Is it 40-something million annually? That's the difference. Is that right?
Yeah, I forget what it is like per year, but I think it's $260 million over 5 years. So whatever the math is on that, I think he would lose out on about $54 million if he does not make All-NBA for that additional, you know, max extension.
Again, certainly tons of ramifications off of that for the Pacers, et cetera. Alex, as always, man, great stuff. Again, setting the pace is the podcast. I know you guys will be busy leading into the playoffs. Anything in particular you want to tease, Alex?
No, just keeping up the coverage of recapping games and keeping up with this team. It's been a lot of fun. We had Chris Denari on last night, and there was a great story that Chris Denari told us about his first ever broadcast for Pacers Sports and Entertainment, where he actually got to do the radio call with Slick Leonard, and they moved Mark Boyle to TV. So I think that if you want to hear the more detail on that, you should check that out. But Chris Denari, always a great listen, and just a lot of coverage covering every game and all the different playoff scenarios.
I believe he just called his 2,000th game here recently. It's my old basketball coach. Absolutely love me some Chris Denari and some Alex Golden. Alex, thank you, sir.
All right, man. Enjoy the Masters.